Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Fred Reck, the president and CEO of Innotek Computer Consulting, a leader in managed IT and cybersecurity for over 23 years. Fred helps businesses streamline operations, boost efficiency, and stay secure in an ever-evolving digital world. Under his leadership, Innotek has earned top industry awards, including the MSP 501 and Inc. 5000. Respected voice in the IT space, Fred actively shapes industry standards and best practices. A dedicated community leader and published author, I've asked Fred to join us here today to share his story and deep expertise to help us thrive in this era of reliable, cutting-edge technology. So, Fred, thank you so much for joining us today. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, thanks for having me, Daryl. I'm doing great today. I'm looking forward to talking with you today.
Yeah, we had a good chat here just before. We were talking about gracefully aging and all sorts of other stuff. And I'm really excited to hear some of your insights. But before we even get into that, curious, how did you even get started in business? Do you come from a family of entrepreneurs? Were your parents entrepreneurs and passed the torch to you?
I wouldn't say my family was a family of entrepreneurs, but my grandfather had a janitorial service, and my dad is a they didn't call it a side hustle back then, but he also had a janitorial service in the evenings. And I remember starting working with him. But I don't know if that gave me the motivation to run the business, but it certainly gave me the belief that I could basically just run any business that I want or create any future that I want from that. As far as getting started in business, my initial motivation was in high school, just trying to figure out how to make some extra money that was better than working at McDonald's. And so I started a lawn care and landscaping business in high school, just me and a buddy. And we had a couple of mowers, and we just show up to little old ladies' houses and mow the lawn for them. That was probably the first time running a bona fide business to make extra money on the side.
I love that. So
Yeah.
I did that in Canada, my buddy and I, but it was snow. We would go around with snow shovels, just get it done. That's a great first start. So what did you do? Did you run that for a period of time? Did that become a real, multi-year thing, or that was just a couple of summers here and there?
That was basically a couple summers. My first actual real business was when I was in college. And again, it was really money motivated to try and just make enough money to pay for my tuition because I essentially had to pay for my own college my way through school. And so I had a painting company that I did. And I did that for 4 years through school. My biggest point, I had 14 painters, three different crews that I was running around making sure they stayed busy. That's when I really realize the value of being able to market, and I'd hang flyers on people's doors and put lawn signs in and get the phone calls and then go out and do the quotes. And basically in school, I realized that when I'm in my classes, I was actually an engineering major. I was in one of my physics classes, and the whole time while he's up there teaching this complicated math, which I liked, what I was thinking about was my clients. I was thinking about my employees, about my schedule in the following week. And I recognized that really what I cared about was all the moving parts about business. And I really wasn't that interested in, these physics and math classes and engineering classes. And I literally got up out of that class and went over to the admissions and changed my major to business
Wow.
and finished my degree in business management.
Now, do you think that made a big impact on, obviously, because there's some people that they have an arts degree and they fall into business, or some people go get an MBA, but then they go to start their own business. And I've had a couple of clients that they had MBAs, but then when they went to start their own company, they felt there was a gap. So for you, what was the biggest challenge perhaps that you think that education helped you with? Or on the flip side, what's been the biggest challenge that it wasn't able to help you with?
Okay, so I would say that the biggest realization that I had was that I enjoyed my classes so much better when I was in those business classes, whether it was like the organizational psychology. The ones I really liked was the negotiation classes. And so I definitely recognized that I had made the right decision. I always enjoyed the other engineering related classes, but it was more just because it was, like puzzles and math, and that was interesting to me. But I could see the possibilities in the world ahead of me when I was taking these upper level business classes. And it just really, that was a huge realization for me. As far as gaps, I think because I basically ran that painting business for 4 years to pay my way through school, that was tough. Buying vehicles and putting gas in it every week and going out and doing the sales process and not getting everyone and really having to manage the budgets. that's probably where I really got my education, was running that first business, that first real business, to get my way through school.
And do you think that was the biggest things to learn, was perhaps cash flow management, generating leads and closing deals, and then managing a team? Were you wise enough back then? You had other people doing the work. Was this part of a franchise, or you just did it and figured it out from grassroots?
It did start out as part of a franchise. That is correct. Yeah. So I had some guidance there, and I had a group of peers that were, so I had a best friend that also did it in a whole different geographical area, but we were in tight communication, just sharing ideas with the business. And I think, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more depending on your questions here, but the power of peer groups and having other people who've been down the path to help advise, I think I learned that in college as well. And that stuck with me. And I've always heavily leveraged advice, counselors, coaches, peer members, things like that.
I think that's really important, because I think that, and this is my opinion, but I feel like the education system doesn't really prepare people. The education system prepares you to go work a job, but it doesn't tell you how to balance a checkbook or how to pay your taxes. We've heard this stuff over and over again. And I think even more so in business, right? It's so funny, because in school, like what you said there was, I had a group of people with the same goal, and we shared our insights and copied each other and figured it out together.
Yes.
And it's so funny, because especially when I talk to a lot of people that come out of school, in school, you're reprimanded for plagiarization. You shouldn't copy your friend's notes. But if I go to McDonald's, go, hey, McDonald's, I got $1 million. I want a successful business. They go, okay, here, copy this verbatim.
Yes.
So I have to pay $1 million to be able to copy them.
To that point, I've got 3 children, and 2 of them are young adults now, 19 and 21, and even my 16-year-old boy. So their whole life, I've been running this business, and I've been the CEO of this company. And I've tried to always share any opportunities that I had with them, whether it just be bringing them into my office here and spending time with me while I'm working. I've hired them as marketing assistants to do some of the day-to-day tasks. I've even taken them to business conferences with me. And my kids are very clear with me that the confidence and the skills that they have, as far as business goes, they learned that just by being around me and the conferences that we go to, and they can see the possibility that they could create for themselves with these experiences. And they're very adamant that they did not get that from their high school and college education. Exactly to your point, that they teach you a lot about maybe the tactical things, but they really don't help you with the day-to-day and the seeing the possibility of what one can do.
Right. Yeah. They say no one's going to give you the education you need to outcompete them.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of the problem there. It's not even necessarily that there's a bunch of nefarious actors anywhere. It's just that no one's trying to get replaced unless it's their kids. And I think that kind of comes. What would you recommend who's starting out and struggling right now? If there was someone, whether they were or maybe having their first kids, but someone that's venturing into business and they're just struggling to make it, to have that work-life balance where the bills are paid, what would be your advice to them?
Okay, so I think you asked me 2 different questions.
Yes,
let's put the work-life balance, I'm going to set that aside, because I don't know if I'm as skilled in that area, but I'm happy to address that. But you said about advice to someone starting out a business, and quite frankly, it is find a peer group and or a mentor, you know, probably and a mentor, to as quickly and as early as possible. And not just one, but a whole team of them. I know I personally have multiple coaches in different aspects of my life. I have peer groups for different aspects of my life. And to the point that I've just made with the last conversation, having someone to bounce ideas off of, people that have been through that path already. And I tell you, most of the time, people are so happy to help and share their experiences that I've never once asked an experienced business person for advice and them go, oh, you know what? That's trade secret. I'm not going to share that with you. That's never, ever happened to me.
Unless it's your competitor, unless you're a dry cleaner and it's your competitor up the street, you may not.
Well, yeah, that may be true, but I will tell you, just in my industry, my peers are very open, and I like to be very open with my peers. Now, if I have a guy right across the street, I probably will not be as forthcoming as someone in the other state. Right.
But they're there. They're easy to get in today's day.
Because the truth is, it's another thing I like to tell people is that the fact is you still have to do the work. You have to execute the tactics that you learned.
Yeah.
And that's where people fall down. They might know what they're supposed to do, but it is a very small percentage of people that are going to execute on the required tasks to get the goals that they say they want.
I love you say that, because there's always the people that are like, I'll tell you, but I want you to sign an NDA first, because I've got this idea for a business and people are going to take my idea and make millions. And I'm always like, listen, you need to be like screaming to the hill. I just went through this with a different client, and these guys have been in business for so long, but they're all so worried about someone stealing their idea. And I'm like, listen, it doesn't matter. I'm spiritual, not religious, but I really love this quote. Don't expect others to understand your grind when God didn't give them your vision. And I think that speaks volumes to it. And if you have a new business idea, you've got to tell everybody about it, and you want them to be excited, and you want copycats. If it's truly your spark, your light within, that's driving you to do this, because
that's the power of attraction. You put that out there in the universe and opportunities arise, and you're able to see those opportunities because now you're looking for them subconsciously.
Right. 100%. I love that. That's great. So what do you believe are some of the most important behaviors and skills in business?
Well, I've always had a knack for being a good salesperson, a good negotiator, a good marketer. I do believe that that's a, I don't think it's a required skill, because you can outsource those type of things. But that's, I think, important for every person with a mission to be able to convey what your mission is to others, to convey your vision. And so that's salesmanship right there. I think ability to sell, ability to talk to people, taking action. The world's full of people who like to complain about the things they don't have, but they're not really taking any action to make it happen. And so just taking action, and it doesn't even have to be on the exact right thing. You just got to get yourself moving. And I guess maybe being like a self-starter and just taking action.
Yeah.
Another thing that is just crucial, and the more I double down on it, the more successful we are, is thinking about the vision, thinking about where you want to go, and then breaking that down into like annual goals and quarterly goals, and then even down to weekly goals. Basically, understanding what your strategy is. That way, when you're presented with options throughout the day in the heat of battle, so to speak, or when a lot of chaos is happening, you can filter it against your bigger long-term vision and be like, you know what, this sounds good right now, but it doesn't match up with what I'm ultimately trying to do. And so now you know what you should not be working on, right? So being able to peel away things that are not important and quickly recognize what might be a waste of your time, so you can keep focused on where you're driving towards.
I love that.
So I definitely say that long-term planning and making sure that you keep your vision. I know you can't see what I have on my wall here, but I keep what I call my big, hairy, audacious goal. Sits right on my wall here. I've got my quarterly initiatives on a whiteboard right in front of me. And again, it just keeps those goals top of mind. I see them anywhere I turn here. I can see where I'm heading.
Yeah.
And when I start getting distracted, and that might go a lot to that work-life balance you asked me about a minute ago. It's easy to fill your day with things that seem really important, but I found that I feel a lot more reward in my day, and I get home sooner to my family if I'm just focusing on the big picture things. And if I knock something off on my big picture goals, I feel better about wrapping up for the day and leaving.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's super important. Focus on the critical few and avoid the trivial many. I think that's so important. That I forget who it was, but there's some quote. It's like most entrepreneurs are like guys that just want to continue laying new railroad track, or I just want to lay out one length of track and have trains running on it all day, every day, nonstop. And that's the sort of idea is that focus. You know, I spent about 50 grand in 2020. Everybody was arguing about the science of this, the science of that. And I had an issue where I felt someone very unqualified was trying to market and compete with me on helping coach people. And it infuriated me because this person had come to my camp and I knew their situation. I knew they had no business trying to tell anyone. They had this manifest your dream business workshop they were putting on. And I was just livid. And I thought, there's nothing that prevents anybody from putting up a shingle and claiming that they can help you. I call them the weekend gurus. They pay $1,000 to $1,000 certification course. And now you can bet your life and your kids' education and your ability to retire on them. Because in business, the decisions you make have massive ramifications. So I end up wondering, what does the science say about business success? And I spent about 50 grand to hire a team of research assistants to help me go through all the academic literature we could find. And we went through hundreds of meta-analyses, thousands of studies, and we ultimately identified 8 critical success factors, 8 umbrella categories, and they are
okay.
self-efficacy, market intelligence, strategic planning, marketing strategy, sales strategy and skill, money management, business operations, and business intelligence. Those are the big umbrella categories. Cybersecurity would go under operations, right? Your HR, legal compliance under operations, your dashboards, your financials, there's money management, but then there's also like the intelligence of what is the data telling me, right? And you, everything you said is really lined up with that. And when you're talking about the person, that's self-efficacy. So once we identified the eight big umbrella categories, we started going, okay, what are the pillars of each of these? What makes these whole? And we drove into them. And for self-efficacy, we have three pillars. It's personality traits, certain leadership skills, and personal disciplines. And so for discipline, it's like personal health, physical health, sleep, diet, fitness, mental health, because that's, you have to have resilience physically and mentally, time management, commitment and will to approve, discipline, and a sense of urgency. Those are disciplines that are really important that will help you execute, like you talked about. As far as leadership skills, it was funny. I was surprised by this because everyone, there's lots of leadership coaches out there, but I'm like, what is leadership? And for, based on our research, it seems to indicate leadership skills are really self-awareness skills, communication and cooperation skills, emotional intelligence skills, and adaptability, which sort of speaks to your negotiation, right? And being able to convey a mission and a vision. And then the personality traits, you know, was a locus of control, which is being a control freak about what you can control. Extroversion, openness to experience, agreeableness, conscientiousness, and acceptance of criticism and feedback. Those make up self-efficacy, which is really the pillar that all the others, people always ask me, Daryl, what's the one ring to rule them all? And they're all important. They're all mission critical. Enron did something like $100 billion and then the next year filed for bankruptcy. So money management is really important. The sales skill, it's all important, but making sure you and your team have that self-efficacy, I think, is really, really at the crux of it, like you said. And that kind of comes back to, say, a lot of people won't execute, or they do execute, but they're just jerks to everybody. I had someone that actually speaks on stage a lot. People listening may know them. They came to me. They've been on this podcast. And after the call, they were like, hey, Daryl, you're pretty savvy with this. Do you think you and your team could help me with this thing? And it looked like what I realized after working with him for a month, one, he's just a jerk to work with. No fun at all. Very condescending and patronizing and just a jerk. I did 30 days to patch up the ship and send it back out in the sea, but I didn't want to continue. But I was happy to help. And the second was, as part of the reason is that he had a continuing, it seemed like cyclical staff leaving and sabotaging everything they could on the way out. And so when I went in there, it was like if somebody ripped a TV out of the wall and the wires are hanging, but it was like that on the back end of his business and his processes and systems and SOP manuals and that. It was like people were like ripping things out as they left. This wasn't just like one person. I could see it echoes through time. And in some ways, I think business is very Shakespearean, where the main characters always fell victim to their greatest flaw. And I think that's a business. It's a personal development venture as well, where you have to constantly learn and improve. Like you say, right? You have to have peers that can call you out on your bullshit. I think that's really mission critical. Do you have any consistent habits, like whether they're daily, weekly? You talked about some things like setting quarterly goals and breaking those into, or annual goals, breaking them into quarterly, monthly, weekly, if you can, having a big vision. But is there any sort of habits that you feel have been really helpful or mission critical for you?
Yes. And I tell you, these didn't just come like naturally. I didn't come up with these on my own. These are all through my peers and people telling me how I should be doing it, and then just adopting them and understanding the value of them later. One is with my personal health. And I do take my personal health very seriously as far as exercise routine. And you mentioned about sleep and things like that. And so I have found that by, and I really, it's only been, I turned 50 and I realized I better start focusing on it. And that's what I did. And that's been 3 years now. And I can just see that I am much more effective. My energy levels throughout the day are better. That helps my attitude be better. As I deal with people in stressful situations, I can handle it much better. And so I would say the habit of prioritizing my sleep, my nutrition, and my exercise has helped me just manage the stress better. The other more business-related habits, it goes around the planning, and I touched on it here with you, but we have a, here at InnoTech, and myself, and I have another business as well, the planning phases, and it sits right on the calendar. So I do quarterly planning sessions at the end of the year. That quarterly session is an annual session where I just plan out the next 3 years, the next 1 year, the next quarter. I look at where we've come, what do we need to work on, what are our weaknesses. I do a SWOT analysis and just, you know, say, where can I make the most impact to get to these goals that we have? And so by scheduling that in, we do that quarterly planning. And then on a weekly basis, I just have my key reports that report to me. We have a cadence of meetings and we have a set agenda that we go over. And quite frankly, I went kicking and screaming into that process because naturally, I'm not a very structured person. Things will interest me and I run off and I do them and I think it sounds like a good idea.
Shiny object.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just squirrels. And so by forcing myself to be routine on those things, it has absolutely helped. Mm. I would say those are two habits. And then just sticking to my calendar, that's a big help too. I really make sure everything's scheduled in there. And that, again, that's not something that's a natural thing. That's something I learned over the years.
That's an important one to make sure you execute. A lot of people, it's like time under tension. I noticed that you mentioned working out. When I go to the gym, sometimes I feel like I'm the only one there to do some work. Everyone else is on their phone. Just because you're in the gym for an hour doesn't mean you're getting an hour of exercise. But the time under tension is really an important thing. And I agree. It's funny because there's that hustle culture. Again, this comes back to work-life balance. And there's that sort of grind hustle culture, which maybe is a bit okay if you're younger. But there's actual laws in place almost everywhere in the world that if, for example, if you're a truck driver, you have to get a certain amount of rest before you can drive and operate the vehicle because other people's lives are at risk. And enough fatigue is equivalent to being drunk and intoxicated. So now you have a business owner that's on this hustle grind and they're sleeping 3 hours a night and all the decisions they're making, it's like they're drunk. And you stack a month, 2 months of daily, you spend more time at work than anything else. All day, every day, you're making the drunk decision on top of drunk decision on top of drunk decision. And it's like a compound effect. You have 1 year, 2 years of this hustle culture. I'm burnt out. I'm burning the candle both ends, but I'm full of stimulants and I've got to drink this and that. And when I first came to Philippines, it was shocking to me how many chemicals I needed to keep moving. I was chronically smoking weed and I was pumping I still drink a lot of coffee, but I had all these like potions and whatever that I would take, whether it was this is that. Now I still do that, but it's more like diet. Oh, I need to have some lemonade because that's going to, I need to have some salt because I've been sweating a lot. It's a little bit different. But in the West, it was really shocking to me how prevalent that was. And that if I just got the fundamentals right, like you said, you just have more energy every day. Even if you look at it as a point from the perspective of, if I can only run 1 mile and at the end of the mile, I'm like, and I need to take a nap. Now I can run 10 miles and at the end I'm tired, but I'm good. That means I bring that much more intensity and focus and energy to everything I do in a day. And it's the same 24 hours. It's the same laptops, it's the same technology, I'm changed. So I think that's great, fantastic advice. And the planning, can you speak to that? I think it's really powerful and it can be a tough exercise, but especially now with AI, it's almost like nobody has an excuse because if you set an annual goal and you break it into quarterly, which is 3 months, there's four quarters in a year, into four goals, and you break each quarter into a monthly goal, and then the team, the people working on that are making it into weekly sprints. Can you talk about that? Is that tough? Is it a perfect process? What have you learned about following that and making it real?
No, it's definitely not a perfect process. So one of the things that I like to do, and I don't have them all here right in front of me, but I look at when I'm setting my goals, first thing I do is I look at what my goals are. And I've got financial goals. I've got goals for the business, growth goals, some of the pretty straightforward business stuff. But then I look at like, what goals do I have for my family? And being a father and with kids that are aging out of the house now, it becomes real. I want to have some experiences with my family. And I want to continue to have these experiences. Yeah. So then I'll set some family goals. I set some goals with me and my wife as far as our relationship goes. And then there's my personal things that make me happy. Make sure that it's not just strictly business goals. And I think maybe that goes to that work-life balance question that you started in the beginning with as well, that when I do my goal planning, I try to take a little bit more of a holistic approach and then set milestones for each of those different areas. Advice that I've heard is you shouldn't have more than three big priorities in a quarter. I've never been able to stick to that. So typically, like when I look at my whiteboard here in front of me, I got about seven things on there. Now, I'm not expecting I'm going to get all of those done. I'm going to try my damnedest to get them done, and I'll probably make progress on every one of them. But if I get 75% of them done, I feel really good at the end of the quarter. And then at the end of the quarter, a lot of times I'll either roll it forward and say, okay, why didn't I get this done? I need to make sure it happens this time. Or sometimes I'll look at it and be like, you know what? That wasn't so important anyway. And then it didn't get done. I scratch it off. I never think about it again. And so I'm okay with that. Maybe subconsciously, sometimes maybe I'm deprioritizing something so it doesn't happen. But then when I really think about it later, I'm like, that really wasn't all that important to get done. I think I'm describing maybe a sloppy process, but for me, I put my goals down and I run for them and they either get done or they don't, but I'm making progress on a lot of them. And I usually get way more than three done a quarter. I can tell you that.
I think that's the way to do it. Progress isn't linear and life is messy and not perfect. My personal opinion is really no such thing as work-life balance. I think what we have now more than ever is too many parasites on our attention. I think a large percentage of the world population is becoming acceptably weak mentally and physically, in the sense of people saying work-life balance, but there's real things happening. Like you mentioned, having kids, like what's more important, catching up on the latest TV series or sitting down for even a half an hour with one of your kids? I really took this to heart. And for years now, I've had a spreadsheet where I try to best to plan my week and my day in 30-minute blocks. And there is some, I forget who it was, but somebody was like, if everybody scheduled their day in 10-minute blocks, they would get so much more done. And so I just think it's a lack of discipline and a lack of resource management at the end of the day. There's no different. We all have the same 24 hours a day. You know what I mean? Like we all spend just as much time typically eating and sleeping and shitting and all that sort of stuff. And I had this conversation with my buddies and there's this thing, this is maybe taking the conversation a weird way, but there's this no-fap movement online. And so the idea is that, and I even had a talk, one of the parents at my daughter's school is Muslim and they're doing Ramadan right now. And I like doing intermittent fasting, and also about once a quarter-ish, I do a 72-hour fast. And just between those two concepts, we were joking about, like I was talking with my friends about no-fap and they're like, well, who cares? Just do it if you want. I'm like, yeah, but what about the discipline? And what about the time it takes out of your life? And on the flip side with the fasting, talking with the parent, he was saying, because I think it was his first time doing Ramadan, he's so surprised how much extra time he has all of a sudden, because so much of his day is spent to preparing meals and eating meals and cleaning up from the meal and sitting on the toilet. But when you're fasting, you've got all that's gone. And the same thing with FAP thing, right? Whether it changes your testosterone, and with the no-FAP there, oh, the testosterone spike is minimal. And I was like, but what about the discipline benefits? So I'm not, do what you want. I'm not trying to be an extremist here in any way, shape, or form, but it's time management. And how much do we really need? Do you need to eat 3-5 meals a day? Or can you just eat a breakfast and a dinner and have some snacks on the go? You know what I mean? There's all sorts of ways to split it.
Yeah. You had mentioned about breaking into 10-minute increments. And I think it's called Parkinson's Law, where a task will expand to fill the time that's allocated for it.
Yep.
And I know that's true. And I think that speaks to what you're saying about if you have a 30-minute increment to do something or you have a 10-minute increment to do something, if you just give yourself a shorter amount of time, you'll get her done.
Yeah, you just confirmed for me. I just wrote it down. I'm actually going to have my staff start filling out that weekly 30-minute planning sheet, because we do weekly goals. Every week we've got, for us and anybody and any of the businesses I'm involved in or any of our clients on the agency side, we do the quarterly goals and then the due items for the week. But now I'm going to have them actually plot those items into the weekly spreadsheet that I have, because I think that's just, whether you do or don't, the work expands to fill the time you give it. That's where I think it's so important people have a weekly goal tracking sheet for their person, not personal life, not just for business life, because most people wait till every Christmas to set their New Year's resolutions, but then a whole year's gone by.
Yeah.
There's some of these things that happen. And I think this is where I say like parasites, and it's Benjamin Franklin had some talk he gave about this, about the taxes we pay. And sure, the taxes we pay the government are lofty, but there's taxes that we pay that people don't realize, like the tax of sloth, of laziness, the tax of idleness, the tax of lack of paying attention. I'm
not being healthy,
but it's these different, and I think that's really powerful. Again, I remember in Japan they had these little, they call them a cash. I went to Japan with my family for 2 weeks last year and I bought a bunch of them. They're just little logs for tracking, and it's all in Japanese, but we know what it is. It's like line item, money in, money out, total, line item, money, like date, line item, money in. And I used to track this, and I did this for a month, and I was shocked. I was spending like $3 a day on chocolate bars. And I realized this is way more chocolate than I want to be consuming in my life. And just that little paying attention made a huge difference. There's a lot of parasites on people and they don't realize it. And so I don't know if it's about work-life balance. I think it's really profitable to have somebody watch your TV show and the ads that you're showing nonstop. It's really profitable to have somebody on social media seeing the ads that you're showing nonstop. It's really profitable to have people that just show up to work and clock out and then go drink your alcohol and do your entertainment activities. But is that going to lead that person to a fulfilling life? I don't know.
Yeah.
Where do you see things going? Because obviously you're in the IT space. We've had a lot of technological breakthroughs lately. There's a lot happening geopolitically, especially in the tech space. Where do you see things going? What are you watching over the next 3, 5 years or so?
Wow, that is a really great question. And so one thing that I'll say is that I got into technology because I found it to be interesting. But the longer that I've been in it, it's actually been 26 years or 26th year in business with Innotech. What I recognize is that every business process runs on some level of technology. And so my respect and understanding of it really has gotten deeper over the decades that I've been doing it now. As far as where do I see it going? So first things first is that I think when I look at things, I look at what is the technology of that business process on? And I try to always keep that in mind and make sure that's running efficient. It's because that's the foundation of whatever that business process is. But as far as where do we see things going, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but this whole large language model, AI, and automations, the ability to tie different applications together, that's not necessarily AI, that's more like automations. But the sophistication that we're getting and the understanding that we're getting of being able to process the greater web or matrix of technology that's around us and having that stuff work better together, query it for information or hand off information back and forth between different systems, that is going to continue to drive, I think, efficiencies in business. And so as that relates back to, you know, the AI and the large language models and the ability to have instant access to all the data in the universe at our fingertips, that is going to continue to accelerate advancements, efficiencies in business. So that's one area that I think the actionable part, other than just learning about it and people being able to leverage that in their own way, but integrating different systems together. Time and time again, whether it be our clients or I can see great advances happening in a particular business, it's because of that data intelligence. In fact, I think
business intelligence,
one of your eight things. Yeah, business intelligence. So that's the thing, being able to access that at a quicker, more efficient rate. So I think that's an area that has been growing very fast and is going to continue to exponentially grow in that regard. In the same vein, I think compliance and the rules around these things, because of this data, man, this, once you put the data anywhere, boom, all of a sudden it's everywhere and everybody can access it. So now you've got a lot of privacy concerns that people have to deal with, or just sensitive information. And there's a lot of rules and regulations around that. And I think those are going to continue to grow and different industries are going to be more and more regulated in that regard. And I think that the businesses that can stay compliant, the more compliant you are, the more protected you're going to be from somebody taking your systems down with ransomware or other kind of attacks on your operation. So the more compliant you are and the more business intelligence that you have by having your systems integrated, I think those are the businesses that are going to continue to outcompete their competition.
And what do you think the biggest risks are in terms of personal data or cybersecurity for the business? You mentioned ransomware, which I'm glad you brought that up. Is there an 80-20 on what people need? Do I need a 16-character password with symbols and numbers? I had a friend recently, one of his staff clicked a phishing email and it hacked their CRM and they hacked their WhatsApp chat group and they were messaging other members. So on the same vein, what are some of the things that people need to be aware of? And is there any quick actionable way to...
Yeah, so I'll start with that. And the most general thing is the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. So you don't want to be low-hanging fruit. So if you're a business or just an individual, you got to make sure that you're less... My dad told me a joke one time. He said that when you're in the woods, you don't have to run faster than the bear. You just have to run faster than the guy you're with.
I tell that to my daughter. I'm like, you don't have to be number one, but you got to be in the top 40%. You can't be in the bottom. You got to be running the right race to begin with. And then just make sure you're in the top 40%. And then you're okay.
Exactly. So you have to make sure that you're doing a certain level so you're not the lowest hanging fruit for anybody that might try to capitalize upon weaknesses in your systems, your
Right.
technology or your business systems or whatever. So that being said, where can you make the best, fastest advances? So multi-factor authentication, actually, most of us are forced to do that in a lot of our applications now. That's where, for instance, you go to a website and then they text you a code to your telephone. So that's what they call multi-factor, two different ways of authenticating that you are who you say you are. So you should have multi-factor authentication on anything that is sensitive in that regard, because that's going to exponentially make it harder to impersonate you. So as far as the lowest hanging fruit, that's probably some of the best, for the least
Sure,
amount of
right.
effort, the biggest change that you can make. I could go through a whole, you've got to check your compliance, there's regulations that you, so there are certain principles, and it really depends on the particular situation. I've talked myself into a circle, and I'm not sure what else.
No, you're good. Okay. So, what are the biggest mistakes that you typically see people making?
Assuming that if it hasn't happened to them so far,
Right.
I'm safe. I think that's by and far. And it just goes to do with how busy people are just in their life. You're worried about all the arrows that are being slung at you all day, and you can only worry about what's right in front of you. And if you haven't had a ransomware attack or someone steal your passwords or do a phishing attack on you that you were aware of, you're just thinking it's not going to happen to you. And that is ignorance, and that is the biggest risk. And so probably checking yourself, say, hey, what are my risks? We're talking about this is a business podcast here. So probably many people are related to a business or have a business. You got to think, what is the value? Like, what is the real value of my business right here? Is it my customer base? Is it my cash flow? Is it my processes? And then you have to learn how to protect those. You want to make sure that they're protected in an appropriate manner there. And so I think ignoring the problem is, or ignoring the risks is a better way of saying it. Ignoring the risks is probably the biggest error that people make.
That's probably something that should be a quarterly item as well, is saying, are we leaving a gaping hole here where someone can just steal all our IP and sell it to our competitors? Or are we leaving a giant hole here where everybody's got four letter passwords? And are we leaving a hole here where, are we just leaving sensitive data all lying around? That sort of thing.
To talk specifically about my business, what we do as an MSP here is we manage multiple businesses' IT networks. And what I'm seeing as the biggest opportunity and the biggest value that we bring to our clients is that quarterly strategic planning. Now, many people decide to do that themselves, or they hire an internal person, and that's
Right.
all really good. But or if you have an outside consultant like myself, having somebody look on a regular basis at your risks and giving you an evaluation and then saying, hey, here's the biggest risks. Here's how I think we should address these biggest risks. And that's a process, not to be a commercial for Innotek here, but that's a process that we do where we go in, we consistently, so depending on the size of the client, but it's at least once a quarter for everybody. Sometimes it's once a month. We're going in and we have a set of standards we look at. We see where they're out of compliance. We suggest this, but they don't have it. And then we look at their business and say, how does that relate to their business? And if there's a match there, like they don't have the protection and it's a big risk of loss, we go to them and say, hey, look at this. This is your biggest risk right now. And then they put that into their strategic plan and then we address it and boom, they're way better. And then we do it again next quarter because we're either going for the next low hanging fruit or technology's changed or the business landscape has changed and new threats have come out. And so as a business owner, you might be making widgets, whatever your widget is, you're focusing on that. You're not an expert in all the risks in your business. And so you need to have people who are on your side looking at the risks on a regular basis and advising you on them so that you can make those changes. So again, that's the strategic planning part of the IT that I think is really important.
I love that. And if somebody has questions, if they need help and want to maybe talk to you about that, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch?
I would absolutely love that. We actually serve everywhere in the United States. Pennsylvania is our home base, though. And so look us on the internet, Innotek Computer Consulting. You can Google my name, Fred Reck, and we'll come right up. Innotek and Fred Reck will come right at the top. You go to our website, and we've got a lot of white papers there that can educate you on some of these things we talked about. But also, you just give us a call. We answer our phone calls live. And we'll be glad to talk to you more about your situation and see if it's something we can help or give you advice on where to get the help.
So for people that are interested in learning more and maybe having some help with their strategic planning, you can Google InnoTech, InnoTek.
That is correct.
And you can look up Fred Reck, FredReck. You know you've got the right guy if he's with InnoTech. Fred, this has been a great call. I got a couple pages of notes here. People may want to listen to this more than once to make sure they got all the goods out of it. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
I'm sure there is. I've told you about I'm big on peer groups. I'm big on setting goals. We've discussed all that. Big on taking action. I think we've probably covered some of the big things.
That's fantastic.
Stand true to your vision. Understanding what your own vision is. I tell you what, just as a side note, one thing, when I started my company, I liked computers. I thought it was interesting. And I started a business that interested me. I then realized how important it was that our computer system, you know, how important computer systems are to every business. And so now I'm thinking, okay, we help businesses with their IT infrastructure and their technology. But what I recognized when I started finding out from my team, all the people that work for me, what do you really value here? And I thought about what I really value. And it's like helping other business owners achieve their core mission. And so actually, you know, what we do, and this is what I have hanging on my wall here, it's to positively impact lives by helping people be better at what they do. And we empower our clients to help others. Nowhere in there am I talking about technology. Yep. What we're doing is we're facilitating them. And so I understand that our core mission is to help as many businesses as possible accomplish their core mission by making sure their technology infrastructure is protected and well-run and all that. But that's how we do it. But our core mission is to help others. Yep. And then we want to impact 10,000 lives every single day.
Powerful.
That's what we do. And so by recognizing that that's actually, and it took me 25 years to recognize that's really what I'm doing. That's what I love doing. That's what my team loves doing. Mm. That, sir, is our core mission. And it has nothing, it's not technically technology.
Yeah.
That's the vehicle by how we deliver that core mission.
I love
so that. So understanding your core mission is what I'd say.
That's powerful. That's really powerful. I think that, again, people that just heard that, listen to that again, really understand that and think about that for yourself and your business. Fred, this has been such a great interview. Thank you so much for joining us. Now you've got your own direct reports, your own family, your own projects to work on. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience so we can all do a little bit better.
Daryl, I really appreciate the time and I appreciate meeting you.